came up in my Facebook from, I don't know, 8 years ago, something around there. And I had posted something and I made this comment about, I guess I don't want a boring life. And I was like, God damn it, Whisper, you jinxed yourself.
It's all your fault.
But yes, there's nothing boring about our life, which is interesting because we're not actually also not doing that much. So
it seems like we're always not doing that much. No. Then you're like, wait, why am I doing all this?
My gosh, my daughter leaned into me a little bit today because I've been having some issues with sleep and I had a kind of a terrible conversation with a doctor and I was telling her about it and she was like, you know the reason why you have insomnia, right? Because you never stop working. I wake up in the morning and you're working. I go to bed at night and you're working. I was like, yeah, could be that. She was like, Mom, you've got to get a hold of this.
I have the same problem because I'm sitting here thinking about, okay, I'm going to be down for 3 months during the knee surgery. And instead of being like, oh, this will be a nice time to rest, first thing I'm like, how can I find out how to work? How can I work during this time?
When I had my surgery, I had like plans out the wazoo. I had the whole plan.
How much work you were going to get done? And how did that go?
My guts were spilling open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you get all that work done?
Yes, in some ways.
Okay, so for all our listeners, I had a fall at work a while back, and I've had a bad knee for many years.
Many years, yeah.
Yes. My original injury to my knee was in 1996, in January of 1996, in the Arctic Circle. In a Russian orphanage, performing on stage, jumping around, something went snap, I flopped to the ground, crawled off the stage. The doctor actually was like, did it swell up right afterwards? And I was like, honestly, I don't know. We were taught not to pay any attention whatsoever to our bodies, to anything. We were raised like robot soldiers. You hurt yourself, you get up, you keep on going until you're falling down. And then you might get to go lay down or something, but probably we'll just be told to get the fuck up and keep going. So I took a fall at work, hurt my knee, and I had an MRI. And they said I had a torn ACL, a torn meniscus, and severe arthritis.
What's a meniscus? I don't even know what that is. What's a meniscus?
Oh, I'll tell you about the meniscus. I found out what's a meniscus and what your knee looks like.
Cat
and
how it works. That'd be a good cat name. Meniscus.
Yeah. So I got torn ACL, torn meniscus, severe arthritis, and a Baker's cyst, which is from the severe arthritis, which is from the meniscal tear. Doctor says that he thinks I tore my ACL.
That was the original injury. Okay. Yeah. Mm.
First of all, I walked around for 25 years with a torn ACL. Mm. And not only that, but I've worked on my feet for the last 20 years with a torn ACL.
You're going to be in there with the football team, right? And you're like, shut the fuck up.
So he goes, so did it ever bother you? And I was like, yeah, it hurt. It wasn't that bad. I just kept on going. I'm like, once in a while it would swell up, but it would always go away. And he said, your arthritis is very advanced.
Oh my gosh. I'm fine. So the thing that I found extremely funny about your diagnosis, well, at the same time, it's extremely sad. We go into a therapist and they're like, I'm not sure why you're alive. You're not supposed to be alive. Yeah. Like, this doesn't compute. And you go into your doctor, like, with your knee, and they're like, you shouldn't be able to be walking on
it. Yeah. I talked to the workers' comp lady. She called me. She's all, I just want to make sure that you got this appointment and all that, because they moved it and stuff. And we actually went on the wrong day.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that was part of the fun, too. But it was the day before, so we just went ahead and went back the next day, which is 140 miles round trip It's not just driving to the store. Anyways, she goes, after seeing your MRI and like talking to you, because I had to explain a little bit about my life because of the way that I was hurt and why I didn't go to the doctor and all of this kind of stuff. And she goes, I can't believe that you're walking. I don't understand how you shouldn't be able to walk. You shouldn't be able to walk. And not only are you walking, but you're working full time. I don't understand how this is possible. You are such a trooper. She goes, I just want you to know that you really like blowing my mind right now. You seriously have really blown me away. And I'm just like, okay.
Yeah, because it's like, yes, I know you're giving it to me as a compliment. And I will take it in as that. But there's also this side of me that knows, wow, I am really comfortable living in pain. And
yes, that is exactly. He said, I've been a bone doctor for 30 years. And he says, your arthritis is very advanced. And so he thinks I tore my meniscus when I fell at work a while back. So your knee has one top part, one bottom part. So the little bits that are in between are the meniscus. Oh. On both sides. So then the ACL comes down through the middle of it. And so just a torn ACL, no problem. Just go in there and fix it up real quick. Easy peasy. You can walk straight out of the hospital. Like it's not even that bad. The torn meniscus, he goes, well, yeah, we could just fix it, but it's still going to hurt. Your knee's still going to hurt because the arthritis is still going to be there. Mm-hmm. So he said the only route for proper healing is a full knee replacement.
Insane.
Yeah. And then, so that's 3 months down. It's on workman's comp. So, you know, I'm not going to have nothing, but already surviving on a string. So I'm obviously first thoughts is what am I going to do to supplement my income? I'm sure I'll figure it out. I'll do listening service. I'll do some campaigning for B&B. I'll do tons of social media, like everything, because I like social media anyways. So that's a lot of my plans for while I'm down. And then, of course, trying to rest, which I'm terrible at. I don't even know how that's going to happen. But I'll rest for one day and start feeling guilty. You should be more productive. Stop laying there doing nothing.
When they replace the knee, they're essentially replacing the socket thing, right? The ball socket.
It depends on how much of it is arthritic. I don't know what the surgery entails. I'm sure I'll be finding out eventually here.
Yeah. The thing about being flat on your ass, for whatever reason, even if you are doing a lot of things and you do get some stuff accomplished, obviously, but there's that element of self-reflection that you don't get otherwise. Because we have busyness and confusion and challenges. That stuff is all throughout the day, as well as all our work. But when you're in bed, you can be busy, you can work. But the constant movement and the scheduling and like all of that sort of quiets down. Yeah.
Yeah. Super fun. So how's life with you? You don't need any new body parts, do you?
Not so far.
Good.
My chub insulates me.
Tim was like, I was sure I would be bionic before you, dear.
That's funny.
He's like, I knew it was bad, dear, but I didn't know it was that bad. I'm sorry. Now he's, what can I do? How can I help you? And I always thought I was a huge weenie. I always thought I was a huge freaking weenie. Like, man, my pain tolerance must be really fucking low because this hurts and that hurts and ouch, ouch, ouch. And now I'm like, wait a tick. I don't think I'm a fucking weenie at all.
No, we are not.
But you get those
Yeah.
In your head, you're a fucking pussy. You should be dealing with this a lot better than that.
No, you've been carrying that for way too many years. And I guess at the end of the day, it's also going to be really nice to have that pain be better.
Yeah, because it's been getting worse and worse for the last 4 years where I've really been incapacitated from it. Yeah, it is going to be really nice not to have that. So picking up Michaela.
Yeah, tell me the story.
Quite a fiasco. Super fun.
But you've been picking up Michaela for 1 month now.
Finally materialized. We got there. No problem.
Yeah.
Easy peasy, lemon squeezy. Had a great time. Everything. Went to leave. Got about 30 miles down the road. Stopped because Michaela had to go to the bathroom. And we left a backpack back in the room. It was up on the shelf. And we all did like an eye scan and a down scan, but we didn't do an up scan. So we drove all the way back for the backpack. We got back there. They had it. Grabbed it, turned around. Everything was great. They were sleeping peacefully in the back. Because Tim's pickup is just a 1-2-3 seater.
Yeah.
So we had 3 dogs, 2 cats, and Michaela and her boyfriend in the back. Oh, sorry. 2 dogs, 2 cats, Michaela and her boyfriend in the back. Tim, his dog, and me in the front. Everything was fine. Everybody was laying down sleeping. We just kept looking back and just seeing little heads and just barely bobbling around. And then all of a sudden I look back and I'm freaking, Mom, tell me shit. Michaela's just like freaking out, shaking her head and back and forth. We're like, what happens? So we pull over. Tammy, one of the dogs, had a nice diarrhea. We had them in the back with blankets and cushions and all that. She just fucking shit on everything. Diarrhea all over. Michaela woke up out of a dead sleep with shit all over her coat, all over her purse, her sweats, her socks, all over the blanket and the cushions. Anybody probably covered in shit would have woke up dead out of a sleep like that. Like, what the fuck is going on?
Oh my God, of course. And
yeah.
I don't know.
So we got it all.
Shit smells worse than people shit.
Oh, no, yes. It was very rank.
Oh, my God.
And total diarrhea everywhere.
Just oh, my God.
Gnar. So we got everybody changed, disposed of the poop. We lost 2 cushions and a towel to the fight of the poop. The poop fight. Lost 2 cushions and a towel. And then we were on our way. That was it. We got home. And that's no.
Oh, gosh.
Welcome to Idaho.
Everyone like goes to their room.
Yeah.
Not talking to anybody. What else have you been up to?
Just working and finding out that my knee doesn't work and picking up my daughter.
I'm so sorry. I've been really busy, but there's never a time that I'm not really busy.
Yeah.
We're ramping up for the holiday season and a lot of stuff starts going on. And I-5, it's the first time we're going to do a little Christmas fundraiser. Obviously, it's a nonprofit organization. We run completely and wholly on generous donations from our donors. And sometimes, depending on what the situation is, the donors, they get a little bit more involved or a little bit more precise maybe about what they're trying to do, in what way they're trying to help us. So last month, one of our supporters, they were like, let's hold a barbecue, like a soiree in our backyard, and people can invite people. It'll be a party. And then you can explain to them like what you guys do. Hugely successful. It was a really nice time, long night, but yeah, it was really cool. Very successful. We met so many new people. It was really nice. And one of the new people that we met there is this fellow who's very involved in his community. And he started, I don't know, like shop local. He wants to keep people from leaving our community. He has that focus. His main job that he does is he has a big mattress warehouse. He's very good friends still with his ex-wife. And then together came to us. We want to throw a fundraising holiday party. And we're like, great. And he's like, and we're going to hold it in my mattress store. He said that they've had other events there, but it's really funny. The first thing I thought of was like, okay, there's going to be alcohol in this party.
And mattresses.
I was like, oh, we might want to keep people away from the beds. Not only because about people might fall asleep is where that was going. But it was it's just a really interesting place to have a party.
Yeah.
In a mattress store. So we're getting ready for that. And we're also getting ready for a possible merger or partnership or however this ends up shaking out to this very large organization. The donations and the things that they receive and the revenue is over $1 million every year. So they're big. They're called International Sanctuary, and they have these rescue centers. They're not rescue centers. They are like aftercare centers. They have one in the Philippines, they have one in Tijuana, they have one in India. And they used to have one here in the States, but during the pandemic, they couldn't sustain it. It was a model that was unsustainable because of the cost that it is to live here in the United States versus to live somewhere like India or the Philippines. The person that started the organization in the first place is a woman, very fundamentally religious, like very dedicated to their church and their belief and everything like that. And so that was one of the foundations that it was built on. But then the other was, and I appreciate this idea, this thought of, we're going to have these women that are rescued, and then what are we gonna do with them? Like you can't just, oh, I'm glad you're out of that house, see you later. So that's why they created these centers, and these women make jewelry for the organization to sell, and that's where a large portion of their revenue comes from, is the jewelry, which obviously that makes sense in everything. I was telling a friend earlier this week, and I said, I know that the income that they're getting is well above what most people in those countries are going to be getting. They're definitely being paid a living wage and then some. But at the same time, they're employed by the same people that they're dependent on. And there's a little bit of a power dynamic there that I personally wouldn't be comfortable with. When we first started having these talks, I think I understood that we were going to be our own entity and they were going to sort of like bring us into their umbrella, but we were going to stay an entity. But in one of our meetings the other day, our executive director made the comment about, yeah, so our website is going to redirect to their website. And she's like, does that make sense? You whispered like that. And I'm like, my jaw is here on the desk going like, whoa. Okay, first of all, that's my website that I built. Second of all, that means we are not going to have a front facing to the public. That means we've been absorbed into the board. They do great things. There's a lot of wonderful people there, but their focus and our focus is really actually at the end of the day different. One of the things is that they only employ, help women. And human trafficking is not just sex trafficking. Group labor trafficking is a very, very real thing. And they're just stuck in a horrible situation. And they've spent a year coming up with this new mission statement. And the mission statement was to be here to help a woman be all that her potential can be, something like that. When our executive director talked to their CEOs, like, we help men too. Like, not to mention also men can be sex trafficked.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Exactly. Men are sex trafficked too.
Yeah. So apparently that was big news for them. They haven't been there for very long, about a year. And although they've been in nonprofits, this is their first sort of touch of human trafficking. And afterwards, she came to me directly because anything that goes out, they always run it past me because I'm the survivor. Like, is this wording correctly? And she asked me, what do you think about that statement? And I was like, okay, so first of all, yes, there's the whole genderization of that because you're not just excluding male presenting people, but you're excluding non-binary people, all the other expressions of gender that people have. And I don't feel at all comfortable with that whatsoever. And that's really problematic for me. I've done a little bit more of a deep dive on their website. And also our mission and our focus has always been so much on giving survivors support, offering them support or resources so that they can build this life for themselves. And we've always had that sort of innate respect of like, this is a remarkable human being that was in an extremely horrible situation, but that doesn't diminish who they are, what they're capable of, their intelligence, whatever. It doesn't diminish any of that. And I've always felt passionate about them because to me, they're getting it right. What survivors need is resources and support to make those gains, to make those steps. And the other statement, it sounds so much like that sort of, here we come to save the day.
Yeah.
Like that savior complex kind of a thing. And the other thing is that such a big portion of their outreach, their messaging, their marketing is all circling around this jewelry. And I was supposed to have a meeting with the executive director about volunteers, something completely different. But we got on Zoom and she asked me, are you okay? And I had one of those moments where I was like, this is going to be a fork in the road. I can go the one direction, which I usually go, which is suck it up, shut up, and just carry on and come what may. But maybe because this matters so much to me, maybe because I'm surrounded by incredible people for the first time in my life, I'm working with a group of people that are just incredible and make me feel like family and make me feel appreciated and seen and all the things. So I was like, yeah, no, I'm not okay. And I just fell apart and I started crying because I told her that I acknowledged the fact that some of this is just my own fears, the abandonment of this is finally something good in my life and it's going to be taken from me. But then I told her, I said, I'm going to be super honest with you. This other organization, nothing against them. They just don't align with my values. And if they had come to me and said, we'd like to offer you a full-time job with us, I'd be like, nope, no way. When you go on their website, for example, I brought this up to my executive director as well. When you go on their website, they're about us and they only have board members listed. There's no visibility of anybody else, any other of the volunteers or whoever they might be that like are there. The majority of it, it's just all this jewelry. And I told her, and that was the other thing I'm freaking out about a little bit, because it sounds now from the things that had some of these little hints and whatever that's been dropped, it sounds like we're going to be much more absorbed into them than I originally thought. Because I had given the green light when we first started talking about this. Like, yeah, why not? Because my understanding is like, we are going to represent them in the United States, but we are going to be ourselves too. And then they are like, they're going to become part of our funding. But things that were going on, I was like, no, this, they're like absorbing us into them. And I was just freaking out because I was like, I don't want to go back into a place where I'm marketing jewelry to people. How did I go from standing at town halls and telling people this is a problem and let's come together to over here like I'm selling jewelry? I'm like, no. So I had a big freak out. But she listened to me so much and she's like, I'm actually glad to hear you say all this because I know that some of my own personal hesitation about what's going on is valid as well, because that's some of the thoughts that come around then. And then she said the thing that anybody in any relationship whatsoever wants to hear. She said, the most important thing is that that you're here. That's the most important thing to me. And I can walk away from that easily. That's not important to me. It's important that you're here and that the other couple of people that are with us. And it was a very wonderful outcome of speaking up and really actually saying my voice. I was really passionate and sharing my views with her. And she was just like, cool. Okay, that's how you feel. That's part of the consideration. That's where we're going to go. And I was like, oh, wow. And what's funny about it is that because of the way that we were raised, I think I had this mentality of by coming in all meek and like, well, sort of maybe, you know, that was my idea of humility.
Yeah.
Or that was what was presented to us as humility. Whereas this exchange that we had, the experience was extremely humbling. I think it was because when people come together in values and in empathy, there becomes that sense of community and it takes you out of your individualness. And that's humbling. I don't know how to take compliments. I don't know what to do when someone's sitting there telling me that, like, you know, you have 51% of the decision-making in this company or in this organization. I was like, what? Excuse me. It was just so humbling. Isn't that interesting that it didn't make me at all feel like, oh my God. So yeah, was my big thing this week.
Whisper's lesson in true humility. It's not acting like a mouse. It's actually roaring like a lion. Right? It's true though. Yeah, that's a good point. I love that. And also, you talked about your organization too and all the good that they're doing. And that's fantastic.
Yeah. And
it's good.
And the other organization too. They're doing good stuff.
It does align with your values and good for you for speaking up about it. Good job, Whisper.
No, I'm kidding. Hey. We're getting the hang of a few things, I think.
You do tend to learn things as you age.
Yes.
I was reading The Myth of Normal.
Right.
And I never know why my mind comes up with what it does, but I was thinking about anthills, you know, how you only see a tiny little bit of it, but there's a whole lot more underneath that you're not seeing and that you can't ever really understand. And so I wrote this little thing about it. So we're going to share it with everyone. And maybe you will enjoy it. And maybe it will help you materialize some things in your mind too, like it did for me. I don't know. The anthill. When you see an anthill, like a volcano of dirt, jutting above its surroundings, what you do not see is that an entire universe exists under that tiny visible mound. The anthill is a mere byproduct of what lies below. The dislodged grains of dirt that once lived happily in the ground, part of the earth, never questioning their right to exist or take up space, are discarded by the builders of the underground labyrinth. They become the observable effects of the maze of life beneath the surface. I'm all blah, blah, blah. Liken this, if you will, to the manifestations of trauma. What is perceivable to those around you, and sometimes even to ourselves, is nothing more than a sliver of what exists within. These anthills are more than an eyesore. They are our unrelenting desire for perfection. They are our need to please those around us. They are our kindness and unwavering pleasantness, even in the face of adversity. They are our drive to succeed. They are our self-denial, even to our own hurt. Mm-hmm. In our culture, they are perceived as strengths. The always positive, I think this was the part that came from the book, was that he was talking about how these kind of things are perceived as strengths. The always positive, driven, multitasking, success addicted, constantly achieving something, members of society that we so often are. What is not recognized are the parts of you that have been displaced to create these anthills. Each grain of soil, a segment of you that was surrendered, often unwittingly. Replacing the dislodged soil can take a lifetime. Things will never be the way they once were, or even the way they could have been. But with time, the soil can be pushed gently back into those neglected places of the soul. The grass can grow back greener and stronger than it ever was, if we are not afraid to go into those tunnels and observe the damage, not afraid to give ourselves the time we need to heal from the disruptions to our souls, not afraid to chase out the intruders that we have allowed to burrow into the depths of our very existence, not afraid to let the warmth penetrate those deep, dark scars in our souls, not afraid to change, not afraid to move the earth of our hearts around and see where it fits best. Most importantly, not afraid to be who we are. There will always be the anthills of our souls. What matters is how we handle them. Once we recognize them for what they are, not for what they have been touted as by society, it is exponentially easier to take the right measures to unbuild them as they continue to appear. Anything that has been done can be undone. The effects can never be quantified, but once we are aware of their existence, we can take the appropriate measures to learn to live with them and understand what they truly are. There's nothing wrong with the proverbial dirt in the anthill. It is not defective or unwanted. It is not there because it misbehaved. Naughty dirt. Or does not deserve to exist. It was dislodged for the needs of another.
That was beautiful. I loved it.
Thank you. So what do we got coming up?
We have... This is still fluctuating, but we're going to have a former guest come back on with some really exciting news and some things that's going on. And the week after that, we're going to be heading into holiday season, Thanksgiving. Right? Thanksgiving, yeah.
Yes, we shall be giving thanks this year because I have a kitchen.
Yeah. Oh, do you know what we're going to do for Thanksgiving, which is amazing? So
what?
My daughter's boyfriend... Him and his brother, their parents are like on the East Coast or something. They don't have anyone to have Thanksgiving with. And so we are actually all going to go up and have Thanksgiving with them. So me, Kenny, Luca, and then it's going to be a little, how do you say that? The Friends Thanksgiving type of thing? Because I think there's a few displaced people that we're starting to hear about. So it's kind of like starting to grow. Already, are all the amount of people that are being me there. This is the first time I've followed my kids to a holiday celebration. So
that's cool.
Of course, we all went to go visit my oldest in Arizona that time, but that was a little bit different than like actually going. So
yeah,
I have a big day of cooking. You have just the four of you?
Just the four of us so far.
Yeah.
It should be fun.
Yeah.
I have a kitchen, so I'm happy.
The other thing that I do on, like, I'm hoping to be able to do for our podcast is it'd be really great to have a few of us ex-cult born-ins talk a little bit about holidays and a little bit, okay, what was it like? What holidays did you celebrate? And thus and so, or what did it look like?
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting thing. These next couple months are going to be a little spotty because we're just moving into our new format and everything like that.
And holidays and all
and that. Holidays and all that. So yeah, so yeah, we are sorry if we are confusing you about what days we're coming out with what.
or we're confused.
Even where we have been, but it's just going to be a little bit spotty while we get that all sorted out. And I guess now, yeah, find out what's going to happen with your surgery. And that quote that says, I read it a couple days ago that said, if you're going through hell, at least walk like you own the place.
Damn straight. I like that. Really good. Yep. That's a good one. I like that.
All right.
All right.
On behalf of our little ant hills, from our ant hill to your ant hill, we'll see you again. Because every butterfly wants a caterpillar.
We'll see you again because every butterfly becomes a caterpillar. Bye.